This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And if you're looking to trade gold, silver, platinum, palladium with low cost and global access, well, Interactive Brokers, you could do that. You could trade spot metals, futures, and options on major exchanges, all from one powerful platform. Get efficient pricing, deep liquidity, and institutional-grade tools right at your fingertips. Whether you're hedging, investing, or diversifying, Interactive Brokers puts the world of metals in your hands. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC, and futures are not suitable for all investors. U.S. gold trading is available only to legal residents of the United States, excluding residents of Arizona, Montana, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Ready to get started? Visit interactivebrokers.com/metals and start trading smarter.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Bank earnings are out and they're looking pretty good so far. China, trade war. What does that really mean anyway? 10-year yield is tapping 4% and the market's showing another V recovery. Our guest today, Howard Lindzen, social leverage and stock twits. All this and much more on episode number 943 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, there is so much going on. It seems that the more chaos that we get these days, the more the equity markets seem to rejoice. They love it. We got so much things going on. We got big dips because this one says that, but then they turn around and they say something different. Wow. I'm back from a vacation quickly. I got to tell you, every once in a while, you got to step back. You got to get out of your environment. You got to figure out where you want to go, what you want to do. It gives you a few moments to understand more about the world, not only about the people, their customs, their religion, their way of being, how they see us, how we see them. You have to do it. I had some amazing times in some unbelievable countries, looking around the world and looking from afar. I started thinking about what happened last Friday, not just a few days ago, 1 week before. And that was the day that, well, it seemed that President Trump got really pissed off and he says he's going to put 100% tariffs on China. Market caved in 3% on the NASDAQ. It looked to me like just one thing was after the other, looking for some kind of excuse, something just to take out some of the extra frothiness. And one of the biggest risks that we have in a frothy market is flawed assumptions. I'm going to get to that. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I am the author of not only the book, but the audiobook of the same name, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. I've written a couple other books also. I've also am the co-host of DH Unplugged with John C. Dvorak. We launch a show on the evenings on a Tuesday each and every week. And the last couple of weeks, we had some best ofs that were just hysterical. If you haven't had the chance to go look at that, I highly encourage you to do so. So, I was talking about the risks. I was talking about frothy market conditions. I was telling you about that in the kind of environment that we're in right now, it doesn't take a lot to get markets going one way or the other. The assumptions that we have that everything is going to be just fine, or the facts that we look at, well, maybe there's too much embedded in. But again, the biggest thing that I'm seeing right now is a frothy market is at risk when we have flawed assumptions. In the case that we're looking at right now, the belief that US and China have reached a trade deal, and Basically, it was essentially in place. That's what everybody was thinking because we were told that. We're great friends. We have a framework. Bessent's going over to talk, and there's a meeting coming up with Xi and President Trump. Everybody's friendly, loves each other. Kumbaya, what a wonderful world. And even though the rare earth situation and the port issues and the fact that we have all sorts of tariffs, that doesn't matter. We're friendly, aren't we? Total horse crap. We're not friendly. We're adversaries. And now that officially President Trump said we are in a trade war, again, I don't know what that means, different than what we have right now, but the notion that a trade deal was in place was pretty much disproven with the recent threat that 100% tariffs are going to be imposed on Chinese imports as of November 1st, which was a direct response to China's rare earth export curbs. These are materials that we really need. And why we saw such a significant amount of, I guess we'd call it a boom, in the rare earth material related stocks last week. Wow. And this year, for that matter. Up until Friday, not this Friday, but the week before, it seemed as though investors had no care at all about which companies they were, quote, throwing money into. Throwing money. The hard-earned money that we have, that we spend our days toiling for, that we gather from our jobs and things that we do, whether it's a 9-to-5 or a gig type deal, it doesn't matter. I'm going to throw some money in that. And every time I hear that phrase, throwing money at this or that investment, to me, it's a huge red flag. Because what it does is it signals this lack of understanding about actually what the risks are. And what it does when I hear that, it tells me that you are a short-term, short-minded, weak-handed investor. Doesn't mean you're dumb. I'm just talking about your investments, what you're doing, right? You're a weak-handed investor who's probably going to be quick to pull out if things don't go your way. And I don't know if this particular, I'll go so far as calling it a careless pattern of investing will change, but Friday surely seemed to spook a few investors when, again, these bold threats that were issued by President Trump against China were set to take place. Now, when I heard that, I was thinking, okay, well, what's the potential here? Because we have to analyze this, right? A lot of times, President Trump will say things that he doesn't mean, which is not a good way of doing business. But okay, that is a way we need to understand about how he does do business. The date, November 1st, why? Well, because it sets a few weeks into the future. Nothing's right now. That can be changed. There were four different possible outcomes that I noted once that happened. First, during that period of time, they're going to attempt a resolution of some sort. The second, they'll extend the deadline. The third, they'll pressure and successfully get China maybe to lift these export curbs on the rare earth materials. And four, somewhere between now and then, it'll be lost in the shuffle of other news. And probably because it was a Friday afternoon, all of this will be walked back before the opening of the future Sunday night into Monday of next week. And lo and behold, my favorite horse in that race was clearly number four. As soon as this happened, I said, you know, this seems like they're going to have to come in and walk this back. You see a 3% drop in the NASDAQ, 2% drop in the S&P on this news, right? Which was the most likely, again, number four. Equity markets reacted very poorly to this announcement. And what did we see? We did see that J.D. Vance, Vice President Vance, said, you know, it's a negotiation tactic. Could you imagine if you were playing poker and you went all in and you were trying to pressure everybody around the table to believing that you had something, and then you just say, you know, oh, by the way, that's a bluff. Who says it's a negotiation tactic? And why would the other side do anything about it? Therefore, it seems to me, China is going to dig their heels in, which is what they did, by the way. The challenge you have right now with China is that their economy is in rough shape. President Xi Jinping, like Trump, he's stubborn. I mean, really stubborn. These guys are stubborn as the day is long. And after months of economic pressure from the U.S., China, it's wounded. And what do they say about wounded animals? It can be the most dangerous. So now that even though we have heard time and time again that President Trump has said things like, you know, we have the upper hand or we hold all the cards, I think we have to remember something very important here. Those particular cards that we're holding all have been manufactured in China. And the threats from either side at this point, due to the power players that we have that are creating these threats and these rules and these export curbs, tariffs, etc., they're going to each be met with substantial resistance. I don't think we're over yet with this whole China mess. If in fact they cave and they come to some kind of a deal, whichever that is, I don't know what that deal is going to be or mean, that's great. I'm all in favor of having a good trading relationship with China because we need China just as much as they need us, by the way. Make no bones about that. And if you're in there talking about how, no, that's not the case, really take a look at what's really going on around the world and how we need these countries, whether it's Vietnam, China, Korea, Indonesia, you look at countries like Cambodia. These are countries, and Latin America for that matter, a lot of countries there. We need these countries pretty badly. And at a time when our government remains in a shutdown and stocks continue to march ahead, making new all-time highs, and even though there's not much of a, it doesn't seem like much progress reaching a deal. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's getting closer, it seems to me. There's some new problems that are going to arise here. Now, even though a lot of the governmental workers are on furlough, meaning a lot are getting paid, and some of the banks, some of the credit unions that work with government employees will continue paying them their amount due for some period of time, the threats that people will be fired is going to change that dynamic pretty drastically. It's estimated that, I think there was a piece last week by J.P. Morgan, that those workers that are missing out on about $400 million per day of compensation. People that are living on paycheck to paycheck that can't get paid on this, that's a problem. We're going to see this show up in retail sales. The suffering and pain, by the way, for people who can't buy certain foods and maybe kids that will be going without. It's pitiful and shameful. But the markets right now don't care. Because right now, the drivers right now are what? Two things. AI, artificial intelligence, and rates. The Federal Reserve at their last meeting, they reduced rates, we know, by 25 basis points, right? It was a stimulative measure. Now they're talking about no longer dealing with quantitative tightening. So, wait a second. The quantitative tightening, which was used as a mechanism to bring down the debt overall of our country from the ballooning amount, the unsustainable amount of debt that we put on over the last 15 years, and in particularly the hockey stick that was added, the amount that went from $2 to $4 to $8 trillion plus or minus during COVID, that's not even been reduced by anything reasonable. So pretty amazing what's going on right now with regard to all the things that nobody seems to care about. I don't expect maybe people need to care about this, but they're looking out further into the future. But if they're looking out further into the future, they're also discounting the fact that we have a debt problem that is going to be with us for the next, I don't even know, X amount of decades. Because we're doing nothing about it, and we're unwilling to, and our government and all the people involved in this particular matter don't have the courage. Don't have the courage to do anything about it. It's really a shameful situation. All right, we're gonna move over and start talking about our guest. Before we do that, I want to talk about Interactive Brokers. Here's another question I think you should think about. will the U.S. Consumer Sentiment Index exceed 56 in October 2025? At IBKR Forecast Trader, the yes was recently traded 40% and the no was at 58%, which is pretty interesting. With Interactive Brokers forecast contracts, you can trade on future events like climate, the economy, or even politics. Pick yes or no, and if you're right, you earn a dollar. Now, forecast contracts are not suitable for all investors. Make your prediction. Go to IBKR.com/forecast and start predicting today. The last trading day for this contract is October 24th. Now, our guest coming up today, who do we got? Howard Lindzen. Love this guy. He has decades of experience in both public and private market investing. He previously founded and managed the hedge fund Lindzen Capital. He's the current founder and general partner of the early stage venture capitalist capital firm Social Leverage, as well as CEO at StockTwits, which is a leading platform for traders and investors. And through Social Leverage, he and his partners have made investments in companies like Robinhood and Beehive, Manscaped, to name a few. He's the founder of Wallstrip, that was acquired by CBS many, 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 many years ago. And throughout his career, he's been a strong advocate for and helped drive the decentralization and democratization of investing. Let's bring him right on. And our guest today is Howard Lindzen. We talked a little bit about him. He's been on before. He's a great guy. Howard, how are you?
I'm old. I'm 60.
Yeah. Well, that makes me old too.
Last podcast. That makes me. Could be my last podcast.
Ever?
I'm 60. Anything could go wrong. I have to pee really badly right now.
Oh boy. So let's do a catch up on StockTwits. I want to start off with that. Talk to me about the Cashtag Awards.
Cashtag Awards are something that we did this year. We've got Stocktoberfest coming up. Cashtag Awards were like our tribute to like the ESPYs of retail investing in financial products. You know, last year we gave out the first Lifetime Achievement Award to Vlad, or, you know, product of the award to Vlad at Robinhood. You know, stock, I think, was at about $30. Mm-hmm. You know, prediction markets were honestly not a thing. At least people didn't think it was a thing, and they've had a hell of a, you know, my fund was a seed investor in the company, but just couldn't have predicted the year that they had. But it really, Cashtag Awards were more a celebration of like FinTwit and the Cashtag and StockTwits and just retail investors like you and I.
Right. That's cool stuff.
Yeah.
You also brought on Anne-Marie Gianzoso, who is the chief commercial officer now. She was from Drone Racing League.
Yeah.
Is that where I've seen this on TV where they're like buzzing around this track thing with crazy ups and downs and all?
Yes, it is. She was early there helping build out the whole Impossible project. And, you know, StockTwits is growing really fast and we needed a head of business that understood crypto, because crypto were like large sponsors of that. Some of the crypto companies were large sponsors. So she was referred to me. Recruiting is like, you know, as a founder and an investor in lots of startups, our basic job is recruiting. We don't get to do the stuff we want. We have to find good people, which is, you know, unfortunately, I didn't know that when I started out doing it, because no one wants to recruit. It's a thankless, hard, relentless, competitive, endless search for talent, which is not what you start a company for, right? Like if they told you all the reasons you got to start a company and said, by the way, you won't be working on the stuff you want. You'll just be recruiting people and trying to sign them up for your mission. It's tough. But Anne came to me highly referred. And we hit it off and she's doing a great job.
Wow, that's great. And this is her job is what? To do what though?
Well, StockTwits still today is like Twitter, an advertising business, right? We have subscribers, but like 70% of our business is advertising. And so you got to go you know, sell ads and get partners. And, you know, we, from Polymarket down to the ETF companies, they all are customers of ours and partners and rely on our email and our branding and our impressions around the web for, so, you know, it's a thankless ad business.
Right. Right. So she's handling that up.
Yeah.
So it's going well though. I mean, people want information. They yearn for information, especially in this area where there's so many different things to choose from. Right. I mean, it's, you know, trying to understand where to get quality information. I think that's the big thing that you guys do at Stocked, which is that the cream rises to the top in terms of the, we'll call them contributors. I guess that's the right word, right?
Yeah. I'll give you the simplest example. and for your audience that knows a little bit about this, when I started, I called this the economy we're in quickly, Andrew, the degenerate economy. And I don't say that to disparage anybody, but we live at this incredible confluence of economics, politics, free time, the cloud, DoorDash, you know, Polymarket, DraftKings, Robinhood, Coinbase, vaping, that you give a kid 23, you know, the Elvis in the room is not Elvis. The Elvis in the room is your iPhone and the cloud and the 23-hour and Netflix and the free time that was handed back to the first time a five-year-old picks up an iPad and puts on YouTube. The parent just got, that's the parent, the parent's free time just started increasing. And then that kid's free time is exponentially growing. You know, that's the angst in society in general, is like everybody's worried about jobs. And I'm like, guys, think about it. We can't go back. People are being handed 23 hours back in their day. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this degenerate economy has evolved. But in 1999, in the very first go around of the bull market of the internet boom, we lived in a world where you go to Yahoo Finance, Andrew, if you weren't a hedge fund guy and you didn't have Bloomberg. And we thought that was Nirvana, and we were 20 minutes delayed quotes.
Yeah.
So we were doomed. We just thought we were cool, but we were doomed. And sure enough, the year 2000 came and went. And the crash happened, and we realized that 20 minutes is a lifetime if you're trading against other people, right?
Right.
And then we had a bear market. And then along comes, when nobody expected it, Twitter. And when I saw Twitter, the only reason it made sense to me as a stock guy is because I was the Yahoo Finance idiot. And I was like, wait a minute. We just went from 20 minutes to real time. I think this is going to be an incredible, you know, exponential improvement for retail investors. But of course, everybody was skeptical. And I mean, you know, my thesis in 2007 was the president will end up saying something and the market will move and you won't have to wait to hear it from Bloomberg, right?
Right.
So I was early, but correct, right? Mm-hmm. And now we had this real-time boom with Robinhood and Coinbase and this incredible innovation happened, and I got it right. And not because I'm a genius, just because I happen to understand the difference between 20 minutes delayed quotes and real time. Okay. So that was an exponential, you had to be dumb not to make money off the real time economy. But then along came AI and the need by Twitter and Facebook to monetize. And no one wants to pay for the product, so they have to sell ads. And so what happened is, and this is why we have this new era developing, which I call post-real-time degenerate economies. The real-time world is not good anymore because Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg have their finger on the feed, and we don't know if what the algo is going to serve us. So real-time became fake news and slop of, you don't know when you're reading that person's message based on when it's being delivered to you, even though you think you're seeing it in real time. So we've now gone to what I call a post-real-time world. And in a post-real-time world, if you're on Twitter and think you're seeing stuff in real time, you're the sucker in the room. Mm. And so now we enter this post-real-time world where you need to really pick the groups that you want to be involved with. You don't have to be on Twitter or Reddit or Discord or wherever you think you need to be anymore to catch real-time news. Because real-time news happens in the White House when Donald Trump eats a burger and blurts out something to the people around him, and then it becomes law or a tweet. And no one has that. There's 10 people in the world that have access to that, and not even Elon. So you don't want to be in the real-time world unless you're a criminal or very close attached to Trump. And so we now live in a world where you're better off getting the information 1 or 2 minutes later. And
right.
It's curated an audience of people that you trust. And then as long as you're head of CNBC and Wall Street Journal and blah, 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 there's still so much alpha to be had. So we live in the most incredible time right now because there's a whole reshaping of what news and information is happening. And this is going to be the most incredible time. And I think we're seeing the very first steps of it in year 2025 because the market's up. But for the first time in a very long time, investors are crushing it. They're destroying the indexes, right? They're in quantum computing and they're in space stocks and they're in defense stocks and they're in gold. And the indexes are doing fine, but the kids that are on StockTwits and the people that are in private groups and the people that understand we're in a post-real-time world and understand where cleaner, slower information is coming from are killing it. They don't know why they're killing it.
Yeah, right.
They probably think they're smart, but the point is they're just in the early stages of being in the right place in the timing of the market. All right.
Yeah. But it's also scrub data. You know, the old days where you'd always be like, well, garbage in, garbage out. But also, I was always fanatical about where is this data point coming from?
Very good point. That's a more professional term for what I'm saying. You're better off having scrub data 1 minute, 2 minutes after the fact, if that's what you mean, than being right there sipping from the fire hose.
Right, right.
Because the fire hose is owned by Elon. Like, unless you're a friend of Elon, there is no fire hose.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So where we are today, is there, but do you think that this is translating into a herd mentality where?
No, because no one believes it because everybody's still playing last bull market's game, FANG. And you got to be on Twitter and you got to be, you know, following what's her name? What's the old Senator? Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah.
Nancy, you got to be following
Unusual Congress.
Whales. Yeah. There's, I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying for someone serious about investing that is not an institution, this has never been a better time to be an investor because you don't have to invest in the next Uber. The next Uber is probably a small cap company that's been neglected by the indexes that you could go create. That you can go do the work on using Claude to do all the financial research for you and deep research that a CFA used to be doing, and then go to your group and say, guys, look at these 10 ideas. Like, let's just get in them and talk about them. And let's get the CEO. Let's go bang on the CEO on Twitter to tell them to tell the story better. So there's just all these amazing ways to create momentum.
Yeah, I have seen that. And I have seen that there is a bit of a change even to, you know, listen, there's still those investors that have, or people that have, they don't want to have anything to do with any of this, right? They're just like, just put my money.
Most people don't.
Let my money do its thing. Meanwhile, by the way, this is a year 2025 where some of the concepts that weren't supposed to be happening, like, you know, your emerging markets doing incredibly well. You talk about quantum. Most of these don't have any business to speak of.
Of course.
You know, you talk about like some of our best investments are our small modular reactors. Those companies, holy crap, those are out of control.
Right. And you're not going to hear about those on CNBC or Wall Street Journal or even on Twitter.
Well, that's because every single analyst, what they do is, what's your best idea? Meta. I mean, yeah.
You don't get fired for saying that. And by the way, they're getting rid of analysts because you can do all this work on Claude.
Well, they should. I mean, analysts have been terrible for years. The economists have been even worse. But it's something. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are changing. You know, one of the fascinating things about our current investment world right now is this merging and blurring of the lines between not only Silicon Valley, but also the investment world, corporate America, and the White House or the administration or the U.S. government. Yeah. You know, this is, it seems to me, you know, we saw the Intel deal, the MP Materials deal, you know, and others. And what's fascinating to me is I was under the impression, wrongly so, because, you know, I guess sometimes don't think through that it's only going to be a temporary issue, that state-owned enterprises is when a government takes a position to favor that particular company for some reason, whether it's domestically or internationally. And that was something that we were always really pissed off about.
Yeah.
You know, like a Kyle Bass. Guy hates China. Let's just get that on the table. It's just, there's no question about that, right? But one of the big things he talks about is the whole state-owned enterprise issue and how they popped up the real estate markets and all this, and they've done. I don't know if we've come to conclusion that, you know what, that's a good idea, or were we jealous about this, or I don't understand what's happening, because it's been embraced by investors that, wow, this is a great idea. Let's have the government-owned piece of these companies.
Well, you're overthinking it, okay? I like to think of people as not that sophisticated. I think Trump is all about enrichment, and we could argue all day about the politics, but I take the politics out and go, like, let's look at the history of the person. He tends to blow up. He tends to brag, but he now has power. So what is, you know, in this case, is he's the easiest way for him to trade is not having, so just to be a part of every startup. So think about what Silicon Valley did. They went, it used to be Wall Street that we were worried about, right? We had that. We all hated, it was so much fun to hate Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan and Bank of America because they were kind of stupid, evil and stupid and mean and charged exorbitant fees. And you knew they were the criminal in the room. But yeah, you didn't expect them to blow up with leverage. You just didn't know what to expect because they had such good business. Why do you need to cheat?
Yep.
Okay. So we hated the banks, but I long for the day. We are going to long for the days that Wall Street and Goldman Sachs were partners with the White House, right? Because with Goldman Sachs, we knew their deal. We'll take 2%. We're going to screw you. We're going to take our fees. The deal may or may not work, but we're in for that. That's what we do. We come in with our suits and we pillage you for our 2%. Some deals work, some deals won't, right? Transaction-based world. Along comes Silicon Valley. And these people are hedonists. They have so much money. They think they're smarter than everybody. And again, not all of them, but I'm saying this is Silicon Valley. And they have incredible wealth. And they also have different values. Like, as libertarians or like the world could end, they don't care. Like if you think about Peter Thiel, like everything's a game. And so now they have taken over the White House. So Silicon Valley, we have two things going on. We have Silicon Valley partnering with the White House, married to the White House, integrated with the White House. And there's some good and bad with that. Yes, Trump is getting rich. And yes, the Trump family has money now in every great startup. Trust me, from nuclear to infrastructure to space, that family is going to have Putin-like wealth because they don't even have to do insider trading. They are literally in the seed and A rounds of every great energy and infrastructure and data company, and Jensen Huang's walking in there and cutting 50. It's just pillaging. It's not Wall Street pillaging. It's absolute enrichment of insiders at the White House. I don't know what to tell people. That's what's going on. I don't know what to do about it, but that's what's happening. At the second order of this is Wall Street missed, totally disregarded retail forever, right? They treated them terribly when they had the power over them, the 20 minutes delayed news. And then they ignored Robinhood and Coinbase and let Silicon Valley make all the money off the reimagining of trading. But they're not going to let that happen this time. So we have this incredible era where both Wall Street and Silicon Valley are booming together and in cahoots with the White House. So the Wall Street is embracing retail. If you think about Polymarket and Kalshi, they're very early backed. You know, ICE just put $2 billion into Polymarket. They're not going to mix the next Robinhood. And so Wall Street is much smarter this time and is embracing retail. They don't want to blow up retail. They realize retail is going to be 30, 40, 50% of trading volume. And then thirdly, you still have for the 90% that want to just invest. There's never been a better time to just low cost, dollar cost average invest into index funds or direct index. So there's something for everybody right now. If you want to be mad all the time, there's something for you. If you want to be out of the market, cash is earning 4%. You can go buy commodities and it's a bull market. If you want to start a company, it's never been easier to start a company. But if you want to get mad, ooh, there are so many things that will get you mad right now and get you out of the market. And I think that's an important point too. It's never been a better time to get invested, or it's never been easier to get invested, and it's never been harder to hold on to your investments because of all the news and misinformation and aggravation out there. So that's what's going on. That is truly what's going on. And the people that love investing, the people that love investing, it's a great time to be a degenerate because you can bet and trade on anything.
You know, it's interesting because you make a really good point there that it's almost right to be involved. It's almost right not to be involved, depending on who you are, right? Yeah. And where we are right now, you know, we look at whether you want to look at the fundamentals or the technicals, you want to look at this or that, you want to be, like you said, be mad and angry that we're getting ripped off by, it was just Pelosi and a few of those guys. Now it's everybody seems to be in it. But here's what I always say. I always say, you know, Howard, go play that slot machine over there. And you're like, why? Yeah. I'm like, well, it's rigged. Well, I'm not going to play the rigged slot machine. Howard, it's rigged in your favor. That slot machine pays out every single time that you go to it. And some people are like, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, why not? Just go over there and put a quarter in, see what happens. Kind of where we are.
Yeah. We're at this incredible moment. And we're not going to be able to fix it, right? Like my kids, 27 and 26, really, one's into investing, one's not into investing. Like you can't, they're not all going to be into this language of investing that I've been harping on for the last 20 years. But it's only going to get easier to onboard, and it's only going to get easier to make a bet or to make a trade or to speculate. And there's only going to be more free time, not less free time. Now, this is barring war or some catastrophic events. There's always some issue that I'm, a swan out there that I can't predict. But overall, you need to focus on keeping distractions away. And the good news is this is all just, mind over matter, right? If you don't want to use the Twitter app, which I don't, and I love Twitter, it'll take you about 3 days to get rid of the habit. There's nothing on there that you're missing. And so it's up to us in a distraction-based world. It's up to our parents to teach the kids. We have to get people. Web 2 and 0% interest rates and ZIRP created a lot of bad habits, embedded a lot of bad habits. And then you have bad leadership on both sides and COVID and distrust. I don't know what fixes that. So instead of complaining about it, it's up to parents and young people to just take control. Stop blaming.
Yep. Stop being upset about
everything.
Put
the phone down. Like there's so much opportunity for people that just put in the work right now.
And you know what's interesting? It's also easier than ever. Do you remember a time? I mean, we can talk about the stock market too, but I remember a time relatively recently that somebody said to me, I want to start buying Bitcoin. I'm like, okay, it seems really hard. I'm like, okay. This is before Coinbase and all that. I'm like, you got to do this. It's like the old days of, do you remember way back when you wanted to like play poker online, you had to like send your money to some international place and it had to move over. Then this one. And then if you ever want to take your money out, it was a whole process. That was like the initial Bitcoin cryptocurrency stuff, right? It was like, really, how do I do this? How do I get money? But these days, stuff is so easy. They make it so easy. You just take a picture of a check on your phone. And yeah, $10,000 lands in your account within a day.
No, but like I said, never been easier, never been harder to stay invested. So what people have to do is have a plan, and they have to surround themselves with people that help them do the right things, right? These are healthy habits. It's for long, it's, you know, there's all this talk about longevity. You and I, you know, I'm 60. So all I think about, I don't think about longevity like the crazies are thinking about it, but I think about longevity like, hey man, there's enough information out there that am I supposed to be doing more weights than cardio? Like diet, nutrition, weights,
pickleball. That's what I do. Pickleball.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying there's so many new, real good ways to get information and take control of your own life on your own, and put that time back in your pocket, both during the day and a longevity, that it really is an empowering moment for people. And at the same time, if you're caught up in the wrong products and in the wrong algorithm and the wrong, you know, state of mind, it's never been easier to get distracted and mad, right? And we see this all day, every day, because that's what's selling clicks. And so people need to take control of this free time that they were given and put their 10,000 hours. It's never been easier to put your 10,000 hours in to something, but it's also never been easier to waste 10,000 hours. So again, these are just freedoms that we've been handed to that we're not really taking them as freedoms. And it's really, I think it's up to me as a parent, like our kids grew up so much faster, you know, even though there was no war, because of the internet. And what we're learning is they grew up faster, but they also got off course. And if you don't step in, so these kids need mentoring. You know, and then COVID came along and these kids aren't getting mentoring at really that university era between 2020 and 2023. They lost serious amount of time at a very key age. So this boomerang effect, and there's a lot of 25 to 35 year old kids that really need to still get mentored. And so there's that little weirdness going on in the economy too. And so, it's not like it's all bubbles and balloons. There's a lot of trouble out there, but it wasn't like they had to go through trench warfare like World War
One. Right, no, exactly.
So it's like we've got to, but you also can't be mean to these kids and say, oh, you didn't have to go to trench warfare.
They had COVID. COVID was at a young age like that.
That was their version of digital trench warfare. So they got fucked over.
Yep.
And parents have got to step back in here, because you're not going to get it from the government and you're not going to get it from China, and you're only going to open yourself up to misinformation. So you really got to surround yourself with people and mentors and groups that really add value to your life. And you got to tune out more than you've ever had to tune out.
Which is a hard thing.
There's a great saying that someone said to me, is there's no such thing as information overload, only filter failure.
Oh.
And so in a world where overload is not going to solve itself, you're only going to get more, you know, with AI, you have to have good filters. And, you know, I don't know what to tell people. That's it. Like, you have to filter things.
Yeah. Well, and every day is trying to make it so that your filtering isn't good. I mean, you look at the Instagram. I never buy anything on Instagram, but you know what?
Correct. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's no longer the product that they originally shared with us. So get rid of it.
Yeah. I'll tell you a quick story. I have a pickleball elbow, tennis elbow that really got very severe, very, very severe, like problematic. Not just your normal problematic. Like, I'm on the edge of, I have one more thing to do and then I have to go to surgery. But meanwhile, now all of a sudden, everything on Instagram is curing your pickleball elbow. And I found this one. I'm like, all right, I'll buy. You know, I bought this like TENS unit that was this portable battery, whatever, and whatever it cost and whatever. But it just came in a couple of days ago. But point is that they're very good at all that. Let me switch gears with you. I want to ask you something and ask this question. I'm going to give you mine and then I want to hear yours. Is there a trend or buzzword in finance that you think is totally overhyped? Mine is maybe it's not a trend. I guess it's a trend at this point. It's a trend of OpenAI committing hundreds of billions of dollars over 10 years or so when they're losing billions annually and they have no idea what this company is really going to be in the future.
And you're quite, and so what's your...
That's my overhyped issue that really is like it's starting to piss me off and bother me.
Again, if it's starting to piss you off and bother you, that's a signal that like you are right, but you're also overthinking it. It shouldn't piss you off. The signal was early and it's already correcting itself. Google is probably going to retain the throne, right? Mm-hmm. I think people just need to understand one thing. Eventually in the stock market, you have to flip a switch and make money, right? Eventually, like, especially when rates aren't zero. So eventually OpenAI has to charge, right? Or has to sell ads. And if you charge for a product, your customer base that was 100 million becomes 2 million or 5 million or maximum 10 million. You have this incredible product that needs, like vaping. Okay, but OpenAI isn't vaping. It's a beautiful reimagining of how you consume information. It's a magic trick, and it's a beautiful magic trick for people that struggled with writing or reading or comprehension, right? And the 10 blue links that my son would stare at as a non-reader, you know, curious person, but as a non-reader, looking at 10 blue links on Google is not getting an answer. Right. That's getting anxiety.
Yep.
So the magic trick for my son and people like him that can go to OpenAI and just get the answer they want, whether it's true or not, let's forgetting that argument. For a reasonable kid that can go read and get a well thought through answer without clicking links, genius. But here's where OpenAI falls apart. And believe me, I know this because I talked to the team and they're not. Let's give you the simplest example of where OpenAI falls apart from here, where it becomes an advertising business. Let's look at Mark Cuban, one of the best entrepreneurs of our time. He has a product called Cost Plus Drugs, right? And he's the best entrepreneur. He knows what he's doing. He fight with anybody on the internet. He can take your harp. He can take the arrows in the back. He started companies. He's a billionaire. He can go spend the money. And his idea is, fuck these drug delivery, the intermediaries.
The Express Scripts and all those guys, the PBMs.
Okay. He goes, screw those guys. I'm just going to mark it up 10%, right?
Right.
And anything that's off patent is cost plus. Now, he's got to go market that site. But what a better place to market that site than a supposedly a truth-telling AI product. Yep. Meaning, if you're going to search, hey, where do I get this drug off patent? Shouldn't the first answer from a system that's supposedly, you know, curating the web for you, cost plus drugs, right?
Right.
But right there, not having cost plus drugs in any of those searches, telling you where OpenAI is going to go. They're going to be in an ad-based pay-to-play model.
Yeah.
And it's so in that world, Google still wins. That's the way I'm playing that bet. Now, OpenAI has a huge advantage. It's a great product. My son loves the UI. My wife likes the UI. So, you know, 20-year-olds are using it and 80-year-olds are using it. So that's why it's being talked about every day. You got a product that in 2 years, 700 million people are using and a huge age disparity, right? Across four generations, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why it's worth what it's worth. But the real trick comes is how you monetize that, because eventually you got to pay for all this.
Right.
And so that's what's frustrating you. That's what's making everybody curious. The good news here is, again, you're right, I'm right. It doesn't matter who's right. What their true understanding of what you have to understand is we all win. Because this time, the companies paying for it are paying for it with their cash, right? So NVIDIA, Oracle, they have cash for now. Facebook, Google, their money is good. So NVIDIA, everybody's going to get paid. The only people that may not get paid by this are the customers that OpenAI may not be able to pay one day. So it is a developing problem. But it's only just starting to develop now because cash has been good so far. It's unlike 1999, when Cisco's customers really couldn't pay after about 2 months, came crashing down. I think it's history's rhyming, but it's not exactly like the 1999 bubble. But I am a skeptical like you, and I'm just avoiding AI other than, you know, Google.
I will tell you that. From a user standpoint now, I use a couple different ones. I use actually the mobile.
Claude's great too.
Claude's great. I use Open, you're probably not gonna like this, but I use Copilot, Microsoft's.
Of course you do, you're old, look at you.
Yeah, well, of course. Well, AOL had one, I'd use that one, right? So So, but it was interesting. I was in Italy. I was in this town called Orvieto, and I was in front of the Duomo. And I'm like, oh, man, I wish I was. This just happened last week. I'm looking, I'm going, oh, I wish I had a guy telling me what this. I'm like, wait a second. So I picked up my phone. I put on the microphone. I said, I am standing in front of the Duomo in Orvieto, blah, 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 blah. Tell me about the edifice. Tell me about how it was built. Tell me about what I'm looking at. It was unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's a magic trick.
Yeah.
We are talking about a magic trick. And what I said, stop worrying about, yes, there is going to be a crash from, but again, I think the crash will be eaten by different people this time, right? Because the cash is in the system. And in 1999, that cash went to Porsches and all this stupid stuff. And in the Zerp bubble, we went to apps and all this stupid stuff. But right now, I as much as I hate leadership around the world and how stupid it is, I'm feeling a self-correction coming from just tech, from good spend, like defense, space, robotics. There's enough good investing going on combined with the stupid investing. Mm-hmm. That I feel pretty optimistic. Now, it's up to you to not make stupid investments. And like we just talked about for the first hour, the easiest way to do that is to direct index or do dollar cost average. But I also would say it's never been a better time to be an independent thinking stock picking investor if you want to do it, because there's just so much a dispersion in the system, because you can go do the work yourself from anywhere in the world.
Yep. I want to close on one thing, because you're a forward-thinking guy. I've known that since I've known you. How many years? 20-something years I've known you when we were both young at 40. Tokenization of stocks. I'm still having a little bit of a hard time wrapping my head around this, maybe because I'm an old guy, supposedly. But is this something that you see as anything, or what is it that I need to be aware of?
I'd say nothing. I'd say some things are exciting, like NFTs. They're exciting to the people playing it because it's so interesting and it's so doable. But the world doesn't need it quite yet, right? Like buying a stock on Robinhood, you can't improve it for me, right? Like, unless you wanted to say, if they wanted to come out and say Citadel sucks and we're embarrassed that we ever did business with Citadel, and the only way to get around Citadel people is if we tokenize. Like, you know the amount of heavy lifting Robinhood would have to do that? Now, at the same time, Vlad's on TV every minute right now saying tokenization's everything. God bless. But he has a much longer term horizon than you need to have. And right now it ain't broke. But if you live in Europe, systems, tokenization makes a little more sense. Or if you live in, it's kind of like landlines versus, I'm on Coronado and it's gross that the most beautiful island in America and Navy has land, power cables everywhere versus not. But so we live in a world where the landlines still pretty much work, and you've got the devil we know with Citadel, et cetera, and Goldman. And so I'm not even thinking about tokenization. Now, I have some tokenization investments because I own certain companies that are involved in that space, but my expectations are those are startups and they could take 10 years. And look at StockTwits. I thought in 2007 and 2008 when I started it that real time was the only thing that mattered. And because there was an AI and it was so new. And turns out it was the only thing that mattered, but you had to have the one, it was only Twitter. You had to have the one main network or you weren't real time, right? You needed scale. And now StockTwits is relevant in a post real time world. And the key was just surviving. So I would say to people investing in tokenization, it's going to take longer than you think, so you better not run out of money. And for the average investor, disregard it.
Yeah.
And if you really want to invest in tokenization, you can buy Coinbase on a dip or Robinhood on a dip, because that's what they say they're working on. But in terms of like getting distracted by it, absolutely not. I don't feel like the government, as bad as the yes, and I'm friends with a lot of securities attorneys, and we talk about just what you just asked me all the time. And the good securities attorney will tell you that we really, all we've done is gone from an SEC, whatever the idiot's name was in charge, who was just kicking the can down the road and like being very
Gensler.
He was very obscure and like, it was terrible because he just didn't give you any signal or mixed signals. And we've only gone to a thing that's like not giving you mixed signals, but they haven't really greenlit it much. Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't think tokenization has any real decisions there. I think the real thing is prediction markets. I think the greatest thing to come along in since Robinhood is prediction markets. And I wish I could tell you I was early into that thing, but I wasn't. I'm an investor, a small amount personally in Polymarkets. So I'm talking my book, but the idea that my son, who will never trade, and I don't want him to trade. I want him to do what he loves to do. Like, why, you know, why learn a language you're not interested in? You know, my son will say, Dad, you're doing a great job. Why do I want to learn the market?
Yeah.
So in a world where you don't, you can just index. In a world where my son can learn trading without thinking he's learning trading. So in a, with a prediction market, the way I see the world going versus tokenization, and they do eventually merge. In a prediction market, I can bet on Tesla beating earnings. The hardest part about saying a stock's gonna beat earnings is predicting the direction of the stock. So you have to get two things right,
right
in your prediction. The idea that I could unbundle that and let people learn that, you know, I love Tesla. I think they're gonna ship a lot of fucking cars this quarter. And you know, and Elon sandbagging in, the fact that he can handicap it that way and just make a bet on Tesla beating is pretty cool. And so I think, you know, when options and futures came around in the 80s, you know, I still don't trade options and futures. And I've been doing this forever because I don't really like the idea of time value of money and leverage. And so I've never traded options. And I know they make sense for a sophisticated investor because you're tying up less capital, but I just don't do it. But in a world where prediction markets make sense to me on day one, that's exciting. And in a world where I've never, Andrew, I'm telling you this is the signal here. I've never made a bet. I'm 6 years old. I think betting's stupid, but I think it can be fun, but I think it's stupid. I think DraftKings is stupid. I love the people, appreciate all the work they've done. I don't think it's good for society, but I don't begrudge anybody. It's better than fucking semi-automatic weapons in many ways. And bullets at Walmart. So I don't want to get into that argument. But like, come on. Parlays and like kids betting and like everything's wrong with it. Okay? Mm-hmm. But God bless. The idea that this can be broken out further and taught as a language and the secondary effects of prediction markets is that news will be much more digestible and real, where we won't have to go to Twitter for news. You'll just be able to go look at the stats. I think that's a huge secondary other order effect of prediction markets. So this, again, I call it the degenerate economy. It's just, that's the theme that makes the most sense to me. And it's the theme that is kids are going to have more time. And what are they going to do with that time? They're not going to get their third gig and their fourth gig. They may start a little side hustle and they may have like a YouTube channel and they may do this and they become a middleman and make an honest living doing, you know, small business. But they're going to need to invest to keep up with inflation and prices, right?
Yeah.
And so the sooner they learn to do that, the better. And that's the world we're heading into. So the more you can get your kids down this path of investing and putting their money to work and making good decisions, the better. And I don't like the idea of doing that by betting on a sports game. I like the idea of that by getting in a group, doing the work, and getting good at predictions and reading the market. So I'm super bullish on that part of the world. But at the same time, I'm also very much rooting, as much as I hate the idea of Silicon Valley merging with the White House because I don't trust Silicon Valley. I mean, I don't trust the White House, but I definitely don't trust Silicon Valley. And as we've seen with Instagram and as we've seen with all these products that like are free, but they're not really free, mm-hmm. You can have both going on. Like, I don't trust them, but I do like the idea of like the investments that they're making. I'm not saying I like the style and I'm not saying I think they're all going to work, but I like the idea of the government protecting me and investing in things that'll protect us, whether it's an iron, like I want Israel's Iron Dome in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want it.
Yeah.
I think it worked for Israel.
Yeah.
I think if they're getting interballistic missiles sent from Iran, the ocean means nothing. So the faster we can put New York and San Francisco and Phoenix and big cities and protect people with a dome, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I would agree.
So if Silicon Valley can pull that off with the White House, I'll put up with Peter Thiel.
I hear you. Well, I mean, there is that fine line, though. We got to be careful about, going back.
You can't have it all. Like, we are at a high-risk situation here. But I'm hoping that the smart people, right, are realizing by watching the drone attacks and by watching what happened in Israel and the hand-to-hand combat war and tunnel war, that we're taking the lessons from that and are going to apply them to our borders.
Perfect.
Right?
Yep.
Because if borders mean nothing, then we better be able to protect ourselves from the sky.
Said well, and we're going to close it on that. Howard Lindzen, always a pleasure having you on board. Make sure I have all the links to where people can find you, find your stuff and stock twits and all the good things out there that you have created and shepherded. And not only that, that you will continue to do over your lifetime. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to see you.
Thanks. And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Please stay tuned for next week. We have... Oh, what do we have coming on? Manuel Blair, Ross Gerber in a couple of weeks. We have Danielle DiMartino Booth, the Fed Insider, going to talk to us about what's going on. Maybe her prediction on who actually will be the Fed chair, the pick for the Fed chair, and what does that mean? Talk to you soon. Go over to disciplinedinvestor.com and see all that we have to offer. Find out more about what we do for our clients, etc. And thank you for joining me this week, every week. I'll see you again next week. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and any guests and may not necessarily reflect those of Horowitz & Company, Inc., an investment advisor registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of training or skill. Advisory services are only offered to a client or prospective clients where Horowitz & Company is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Any mention of third-party companies, products, or services is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement. Hypothetical scenarios or forward-looking statements are for illustrative purposes and should not be viewed as guarantees. Content is intended for U.S. residents only and may not be applicable in other jurisdictions. Listeners should consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Please visit our website for additional information, disclosures, as well as a copy of our Form CRS. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.